Hi, and welcome to Last Man Standing, here with me, Paul Stevenson, live with you on Republic Broadcasting Network. And before I forget, do remember to keep us on the air, folks, and to keep free speech alive here at RBN. And if you go to the homepage, Republic Broadcasting Network, republicbroadcasting.org, you'll see the various donate options available to you, including credit card, debit card, and PayPal options as well. So do keep us in mind, even if it's just a few dollars, $5, $10, whatever. It really does help to keep us on the air, because networks like this are unique. I don't know of any other network like this where you can talk about the things we talk about, which is pretty much everything. And I've always said, we don't necessarily always get everything right, but none of us are paid. And so we are not in a position to be compromised in any way. And in addition, considering what we do talk about, we take a risk. And quite frankly, in the UK, it's increasingly risky to talk about sort of things that I talk about on this show. So play your part, support us, and keep us on the air so that we keep this community alive and allow us to continue to do what we do here. Okay, with all that said, I'm joined with Dr. Patrick Slattery. Thank you for joining me, Patrick.
Yes, thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. I suppose where to start over here, or if you've got anything pressing that you'd like to open up today's conversation and interview with, what do you think is pressing for you today or this week?
Okay, well, I haven't recorded my Friday show yet. And Friday show, I was thinking of going into Donald Trump's threat that if, you know, he just survived an assassination attempt, it seems. And
did he? Course, when did that happen? I haven't heard about that.
And of course, I ran through with it. But, you know, after the assassination attempt, there were reports that, well, the Iranians had been planning their own assassination attempt. Just, you know, it's just somebody saying. And so then Trump is now.
Who said that? Benjamin Netanyahu?
Well, no, yes, I think he did say that. I think he said that.
Imagine my surprise.
Yeah, but it had been said before that even. And if Trump is now saying that if he is assassinated by Iran, that he hopes that the country will obliterate Iran, just wipe it off the face of the earth. Now, of course,
for God's sake.
Yes. Just remember that what motivation would Iran have for assassinating Trump? Well, Trump brags about routinely in his traveling show, he brags about having assassinated General Soleimani, who wasn't just some guy. He wasn't just some guy in the Iranian army. I mean, he was one of the three or four top Iranian people in the government. You know, he was, I don't know his exact position, but he was very, very much revered, very much respected. And Trump had him assassinated and has continued to brag about it. One would think that after Trump's narrow brush with assassination, that maybe he would reconsider an order to have assassinated somebody, but it doesn't seem to be the case. And indeed, so first of all, he assassinates Soleimani, and now he's saying if the Iranians were to retaliate in kind, that he would hope that his successor, who if he winds up becoming president, that successor would be J.D. Vance, that his successor would wipe Iran off the face of the earth, obliterate the country. And of course, J.D. Vance is somebody who I don't know where his heart commitments are, what he really thinks about things. But in his very first press interview after having been anointed as Trump's running mate. He's talking to Sean Hannity, and without even being prodded.
Not a good sign for a start.
Yeah. If we're going to hit Iran, we shouldn't pussyfoot around. If we're going to hit them, we got to hit them hard. So Trump is setting up this situation where the Israelis, who do have a track record of assassinations, the Iranians don't, but the Israelis have this track record of assassinations. And he's setting up a situation where the Israelis, if they feel that that Vance would follow through on a war, they can give him the pretext to launch an all-out war with Iran simply by assassinating Trump.
Well, if Trump had any manner of sagacity around this issue of our greatest ally in the Middle East, he would be more circumspect about making such a statement, because if there was ever a greater motivation for Mossad to take out Donald Trump, then I haven't heard it. But like I said, if he was sagacious enough to understand what he's actually dealing with, he wouldn't make a statement like that, because, like I said, now you've got a huge motivation for the Zionists to assassinate Donald Trump and blame the Iranians. It's depressing.
So I don't think he knows the meaning of the word. I know the meaning of the word. I can figure it out because SAG are the first three letters of SAGE. And I take it that it has to do with being like a sage.
Oh, you mean sagacity? Right? It just means wisdom in a kind of a streetwise way, just to be sort of shrewd in terms of and astute in what you're dealing with and your knowledge of things. That's all it is.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't. So I just thought I'd bring that up as a kind of just a little first foray into things.
Yeah, I mean, that is quite a big thing for Trump to be saying. Like I said, that's, in my opinion, that's going to leave him very vulnerable. We know from 9/11 that the Mossad had plenty of motivation, and we only have to look at what happened afterwards, where I think we can safely point the finger in that direction, that it was a Mossad operation. Trump obviously... Oh, I'm just looking, because now you... Sometimes you use these words and then you ask me, and I looked it up exactly, the definition of sagacity, and it uses the example, actually, the quality of being sagacious, quote, a man of great political sagacity. Yeah, which is interesting. Quick and wise in understanding and judgment. Yeah.
So,
anyway,
I just done listening to Nick Fuentes's, I guess it would have been his Thursday show, where he was breaking down Netanyahu's speech.
Whose show? Whose show? Sorry,
Nick Fuentes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and he's making the case for why he's not even going to vote. He's just kind of disgusted. He had a pretty good rant. I was even considering maybe I ought to rebroadcast his rant. Pretty good rant about how the Trump train has gone off the tracks. He's somebody who personally loves Trump, thinks of him as a big hero, but he's gone off the tracks. The Trump train is off the tracks, and
It doesn't seem that it takes a lot for the Trump train to go off the tracks, which is the problem.
Yeah. I mean, Trump has he had some bravery. I mean, it took a lot of bravery to do some of the things he's done. He really has taken great risks. But he's easily played. He's frankly, he's pretty easily defeated. I think his opponents have him figured out. One of his character flaws is that he doesn't he can't admit mistakes. So he has to cling to his mistakes or pretend they never happened in the first place. And, you know, he does have this very particular relationship with the truth where, you know, one day he can be praising, oh, it could be Nikki Haley or Chris Christie or whomever. And then the next day calling them fat or bird brain or whatever. And then all of a sudden, oh, they're on good terms again. And yeah, they'll have a role in my administration. It's, you know, that's one character flaw. But the other thing is making horrible mistakes, but in some cases, just sticking to them. So bragging about assassinating Soleimani, that was an awful thing to do. It was a horrible thing. And yet he wants to say, well, Soleimani had so much American blood on his hand. Soleimani had a lot of ISIS blood on his hands. And to the extent that the CIA was funding ISIS, you know, you could make that case. By the way, while Trump was president, I mean, Trump may have thought he was fighting ISIS with American military in Syria. I don't think American military in Syria was at all effective. I think to the extent that ISIS was defeated, it was by Bashar al-Assad's army with Hezbollah, with Iranian support, and with Russian air support. I think that's clear. I don't think the Americans really were at all effective, the American military. And at the same time as the American military might have been making some feeble efforts at fighting ISIS, the American CIA seems to have been very much involved in supporting ISIS. And then finally, just before I kick it back to you, Lloyd Austin in, what was it, 2018 or so, he spoke to, or maybe even 2016. It was might have been before Trump was even president. Yeah, in fact, it was before Trump was president. He was answering questions in, I think it was a Senate committee hearing, and he was asked about the money that had been supplied to the so-called moderate rebels in Syria. I think it was it $500 million, and how many people had been trained with that $500 million, and he said four or five. Well, why only four or five? The only reason I can think of is that all the other people who were being trained just ran off with the weapons and joined ISIS. I think that is probably what happened. But, you know, Trump wants to...
Yeah, I mean, I think...
Yeah. And he still wants to pretend as if the vaccine Operation Warp Speed saved millions of lives, this type of thing.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that at the time, the only people who were really serious about eradicating ISIS in terms of a sophisticated air force was Russia. I think you had, you know, the American allies over there, you know, dropping bombs and said, oh, whoops, there goes some more Syrian infrastructure. You know, they were basically trying to annihilate Syria as a functioning sovereign state with their air force, with the pretense that they were fighting ISIS. And like we know that they were funding and arming these so-called moderate rebels as a proxy to overthrow Assad. And there's another reason why they hate Putin, because he was throwing a serious spanner in the works. He was, you know, they were wiping these people out. And I'm sure Putin knew that, but, you know, and I'm sure they are aware of that, what was really going on. But back to Trump. You know, you had people like Tucker Carlson at the RNC. And as we know, Tucker has been rather cooler on, along with Candace Owens, about, you know, the United States' obsession with Israel. And, you know, I think the penny has dropped with a lot of Trump supporters. And I mentioned the muted response when you had these Israelis coming up on the stage trying to garner and, you know, emotional support. And it just didn't seem that, you know, the majority of the audience were on board with it. And, you know, and yet Netanyahu addressed the Congress. So what I'm saying is, isn't Trump aware of the Candace Owens and Tucker Carlson effect? isn't he aware himself that there are an increasing amount of his base that when they say America first, they mean America first, not Israel first, or not America and Israel equally first, or whatever? And did you watch any of Netanyahu's address of the Congress? And if so, what did you think of that? Because that seemed to be a bit of a mixed bag as well.
Well, it was an hour long. How much of it did I hear? I know I heard the so-called highlights. Chink Wigger, who has a show called The Young Turks, Chink Wigger and his sidekick, Anna Armenian, I think is her name, Anna Kasparian, whatever it is. Chink Wigger had this really emotional and kind of low IQ rant about it. He was outraged by the speech, which is good. And Anna Armenian was also outraged by the speech. But honestly, they could have done a much, much better job, refuting the points. They were focused too much on AIPAC money, and AIPAC's direct money to Congress critters actually isn't that big. AIPAC's role isn't so much funneling in money. AIPAC's role is more in kosher certification. Once AIPAC gives the sign of approval, if you're going to cooperate with AIPAC, then money comes in directly from big deep pocket Jews. It doesn't actually get funneled through AIPAC. And so when you're looking just at the AIPAC numbers, you have somebody like Chuck Schumer, over the course of his 30-something year career, has gotten almost $2 million. You know, it's kind of reminiscent of the Austin Powers movie where Dr. Evil, who's just been awakened after 30 years where there had been a lot of high inflation in the middle, and he's going to blow up the world unless he gets $1 million. Everybody looks at him. Over the course of a political career, $2 million is not a whole lot of money. But these people are getting mega bucks through other Jewish sources that AIPAC gives us the seal of approval, and then it opens the door for all this other money. Plus, the other thing is that if you step out of line, there's both the carrot and the stick. The carrot is the money that you receive. The stick is that if you step out of line, there is going to be a huge amount of money focused on a electoral opponent that you wouldn't have otherwise had. And so they gave a lot of outrage. They were playing clips from the speech, and the speech was truly outrageous. He was calling Americans, any Americans who protested against Israel, they are useful idiots. They're clearly making the case for the United States launching a war against Iran. That's what this is about. This is about the United States fighting a war for Iran, against Iran, for Israel. You had the entire, just about the entire Republican delegation to Congress, with the exception of Congressman Thomas Massey. I didn't hear anybody saying that Rand Paul didn't show up. I don't know. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. Half of the Democrats boycotted. And what's kind of interesting, and then Kamala Harris met with Netanyahu on Thursday, and after the meeting released a statement that will surely be denounced by the Republicans as being pro-Hamas. It's not exactly pro-Hamas, but it certainly had appearances of being much more even-handed and, I guess it was designed to show her progressive, the members of the Democratic progressive base, that she's not going to be Netanyahu's puppet. which I don't know if I would believe, but that was the design. So yeah, that's what I heard. Yeah, I heard excerpts of the speech. I don't know if I could really listen to Netanyahu for an hour. I guess at some point I'll try. I don't know. Have you heard excerpts from it, or did you listen to it?
I've heard excerpts, and you know, it was the usual stuff, conflating Israel's interests with the United States' interests, and the same as these type of thing as these Israelis, this couple that got up and attempted their emotional, conjurings for the hostages, and how, again, Israel's interests are the same as the United States. And of course, we know this is complete nonsense. In fact, they really have to push that narrative because it's such a big lie. And one of the greatest insights that I heard John Mersheimer ever make was that if indeed it was the case that Israel's interests were the same as the United States, then there would be no need for the lobby. It's because they are not that there has to be so much in the way of lobbying and aggressive lobbying and intimidation to coerce and to essentially bribe politicians into supporting Israel, because the interests are so distinct from each other, you know? So from what I did hear, and I'm like you, I struggled to listen to that man. But it was the usual stuff you would expect. And like you said, it's just constant drumming up and banging the war drums for a war with Israel or a war with Iran. And like you said, now you've got this, this threat or this stupid Trump statement that if he should be killed, we should, you know, wipe Iran off the map. And so, I mean, but I have noticed a difference. You can't have people like Candace Owens and Carson with the kind of views they have and the kind of reach they have without it affecting genuine American firsters. And there has been a change there. I mean, you know, you're having a generational change. We are becoming increasingly far removed from the World War II narrative. And by the way, including the outdated human rights organizations that were joined as a result of the Holocaust, which has now led to, you know, open borders and a bunch of supine politicians who dare not leave things like the European Court of Human Rights et al. I find it interesting, though, that when it comes to the ICJ and the International Criminal Court, they're quite easily inclined to ignore such humanitarian bodies. And, you know, and those are quite serious. Those are considered to be the worst violations of human rights. They can ignore those when it suits them, but European Court of Human Rights, even though there's nothing they can do to enforce them, this is typical Jewish audacity. If we decided to ignore the European Court of Human Rights and said we're not taking these people and we are in violation of some post-World War II organization or agreement that we signed up to, there's nothing they can do. But of course, our politicians use that as an excuse because they don't care. They come up with these plans and they're always long-winded and they involve lots of lawyers and shenanigans, and all the while this is happening, immigration continues. And then you've got the other side of the two cheeks of the same backside coming to power over here in the Labour government, and they scrap the Rwanda plan, which itself was a delaying tactic, a complete facade, a complete sham. But I guess some of the immigrants and some of those thinking about coming across the channel it was some sort of a deterrent, I guess. But the Labour government have just got rid of that now. And the Labour government, well, they've gone full-on ambitious because they now want to take on, with the cooperation of Europe, they want to take on the whole criminal, the whole criminal gang complex that brings these people here in the first place. And in addition to that, they want to sort out all the social, economic, and health and educational problems in Africa and the Middle East. So they want to go to the source. So, I mean, honestly, You see, I didn't realize, Patrick, but you see, Africa and the Middle East, it was only up until 20 years ago that those places were absolutely beacons of civilization. And they had no healthcare problems, no educational problems, and no economic problems for the last 2,000 years. But only in the last sort of 20 years have these problems emerged in Africa. And now we must deal with them. And according to the Labour government, an ambition as it is, to deal with all these problems in the third world, I mean, it might be just a little bit easier to secure our own borders, because I'm being facetious, obviously, about my views on this recent collapse of the African continent and Middle East, because these places have historically been, you know, let's say, struggling for civilization in the way that the Europeans have enjoyed. And we didn't seem to have any problems with mass immigration then, because guess what? We controlled our borders, and we didn't have a bunch of Jewish groups lobbying our politicians to open those borders. So the simple answer is to secure our borders. But whether it's the Conservatives or the Labour government, they will find everything and anything to stop and to avoid doing that, you know?
Well, so we listen to a lot of stuff. We pay attention to a lot of people. You mentioned John Mearsheimer, Tucker Carlson, Candace Owens. I was talking about Nick Fuentes. There are a lot of people out there. You know, we've in the past talked about Douglas McGregor, Alexander McCurris. There's a lot of people that we talk about. And there are a lot of very, very smart people like John Mearsheimer, like Ray McGovern, for instance, who have incredible experience, a lot of background, a lot of knowledge, but they are not willing to talk about the phenomenon of Jewish power. And so, you know, so there's a limit to what they can explain. And there are some people who do talk about it. Nick Fuentes certainly talks about it. He talks about it very bluntly in very similar.
Yeah, like I said, the younger generation, those who are sort of further removed from this sort of post-World War II narrative, they are talking about it because they're not emotionally attached to it.
Yeah. So I guess he's 25, and Candace Owens, I think, is 35, and so she's also a lot younger, and now she's talking about it very, very bluntly, although not as sophisticated. Nick, for his youth, when I heard him maybe 2 years ago debate Robert Barnes, whom, by the way, I heard Robert Barnes on Mercurius's show, maybe it was recorded a day or so ago, and Robert Barnes, he's a American lawyer, and he's got a good background, but he was on a debate with Nick Fuentes 2 years ago about Jewish power, and Nick at the time would have been maybe 23, and Robert Barnes actually wound up sounding kind of ridiculous because he just doesn't want to confront it. But
you are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Hey there, are you going to wait till the cows come home to get your new ease-off drop-in lift?
What in the world is an ease-off drop-in lift?
Our EaseOff is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the EaseOff installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com. That's EazeOff.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
Ezoff LLC, 417-932-6419.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read one. This product has been a godsend for my father, who suffered from a heart attack about 2 years ago. He was prescribed medications for his condition, which was so serious, he almost died. But he hasn't been able to afford most of the medications. After researching alternatives that were more affordable, he tried Extendivite. Since taking it, he has consistently lower blood pressure and experiences less angina. We are currently on our fifth bottle. I enthusiastically recommend this product, and I am grateful that it is available. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email proudsouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
Wake up. Stop wasting your own time. Today, my friends, Americans are more pessimistic about the economy than they have been in a very long time. And it can be soul-crushing to work as hard as you possibly can, still not have enough money for all the bills. If you're feeling a tremendous amount of stress about your finances, you ain't alone. According to a recent survey, approximately half the entire population is struggling with mental health issues due to financial stress. 47% of adults say concerns about money have at least occasionally caused anxiety, stress, worrisome thoughts, loss of sleep, depression, or other effects. That according to Bankrate's latest money and mental health survey. Bankrate? Who in the hell is Bankrate? Call Kettle Moraine Limited today at 602-799-8214. 65% of the people say their biggest concern is inflation and rising prices, and nearly 60% say their stress derives from paying for everyday expenses such as groceries, utilities. 56% say they're worried about having enough emergency savings. 47% are most concerned about being in debt. I like the people that are worried about having enough emergency savings. That's another one of the reasons that you should have been buying gold and silver years ago. Stop worrying about what it's worth from day to day. It's up, it's down, it's inside out. You stop worrying about those things. You can call Kettle Moraine at 602-799-8214 for a private consultation. That's 602-799-8214. Protect your money now or forever kiss it goodbye. Call Kettle Moraine Limited today at 602-799-8214.
Hey there, this is Sheila with Hempaste by Minutra. Why is Hempaste better than other CBD options on the market? It's important to point out that the common CBD oil does not contain CBDA or CBGA, and they're only found in fresh or raw hemp products, like Hempaste. Hempaste contains the entire plant, minus any stems. This means the product retains the complete genetic code of the plant, which also includes those two vital cannabinoids, CBGA and CBDA. Over and over, experts keep saying the more intact or less processed the hemp plant is, the more effective it is. Happy Hemp Paste.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for Hemp Paste at republicbroadcasting.org. And visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
would have been maybe 23. And Robert Barnes actually wound up sounding kind of ridiculous because he just doesn't want to confront it. But Nick's gotten a lot better.
Do you remember how he refuted any of Nick's arguments?
That was 2 years ago. I'm sure you could still find it on the internet. But you know, the points, the types of points he was making, which is just very typical. It's not all Jews. It's not only Jews. Other people do it too. It's not a big deal. So that type of thing. And, you know, cause you can deflect and you can say, well, there's only how many, 6 million Jews in America. We keep hearing that 6 million figure. There's 60 million evangelicals. They're the real force. They're the real Zionists. If, you know, that type of argument, if you look at people responsible for immigration, I mean, Kevin McDonald made an excellent case in Culture of Critique for the leading and vital role of Jews in the 1965 Immigration Act, which is what he was looking at. But you can look at it in immigration policy since then as well. And it's not as if they didn't have allies, but without the Jewish role, it wouldn't have happened. They managed to get Ted Kennedy and the business lobby and others to be allies with them. But without the Jewish role, it wouldn't have happened. Whereas you could say without the Chamber of Commerce, they probably still could have made it happen. You look at a lot of things. If we have a war with Iran,
the point. Yeah,
go for it.
I was gonna say the point is that no other group, no domestic group, including these perfidious politicians, had the motivation or the idea of mass immigration. The whole concept of mass immigration has its roots in Jewish interests, is the point. And so they went about, bribing and intimidating it into existence. And if you've got enough money and you've got enough unscrupulous, treacherous politicians who can either be bribed or intimidated or, assassinated, if you don't play ball with these people, then you can get it done. But the point is, like I said, you would think when listening to Keir Starmer over here in the Labour government that this was a recent phenomenon, that there are social, criminal, economic, educational problems in Africa. These problems have always existed. Africa hasn't changed. It doesn't really change. But yet we didn't have a problem with immigration up until really the 60s, 70s, and even then it was fairly moderate until Tony Blair took control of the UK and handed over the reins to Barbara Roche, an East End Jew, who is openly on record to say that she wants as many immigrants and a complete open door policy as possible. So anyway, I digress a little bit, but most people, this older generation will not deal with this problem. They will not. And listen, I actually hate our politicians because they're the people who are, they're the traitors. But someone is bribing. Someone is motivated. There is a source to this insanity of mass immigration. And you don't have to take my word for it. You can go and look through their writings themselves. It's there. You can see. They'll take credit for it when they feel it's appropriate to do so,
And this really, I guess the talking about Jews and Jewish power is the Rubicon. And, Nick Fuentes crossed it. Somebody in the super chats afterwards asked him something about, running for office. And he referred to having, he talks too much about Jews. So that winds up being a disqualification. And you have somebody like Douglas McGregor, who speaks clearly enough that if a listener knows about Jewish power, the listener knows absolutely what McGregor's talking about. But if a listener doesn't understand, then it'll go over his head. So McGregor will talk about Victoria Nuland and talk about her motivation being at least in part due to an ethnic grudge from her ancestors. And then he'll go on and say, you know, and if you look at Tony Blinken and Adam Schiff and many of these other people who are pushing for wars, they have the same ancestral ethnic grudge, and the same with what he calls the donor class. Well, we hear that and we know that he knows that these people are Jewish and they have a Jewish ethnic grudge against the Slavs of that part of the world, against the, in this case, we're talking about not just Russians, but Ukrainians as well. We know he's talking about that. We know he knows, but he won't be explicit. And in his case, because he, in the waning weeks of the Trump administration, he did have an advisory role at the Pentagon, an official advisory role. He's somebody who plausibly could be brought into the administration. I'm not saying as Secretary of Defense or something, but maybe as in an advisory role or something. And so perhaps he might be trying to keep his powder dry for that reason. And then Ray McGovern, who I guess is in his mid-80s by now, he seems pretty healthy and doesn't suffer from any of the dementia signs that that Biden does. But McGovern was also talking about ethnic grudges. Not quite to the extent McGregor does, but Ray McGovern. And Ray McGovern, by the way, he studied Russian in college and seems – I've heard him – well, he obviously is pretty good Russian. I would imagine he's fluent. He read some poem in Russian at one point, and he sounded pretty good to my ear. But at any rate, even these people who obviously know and obviously speak in what you might say are dog whistles to their audience in the know, they won't speak explicitly enough where they're bringing in people who otherwise wouldn't understand. They're not black-pilling people, red-pilling people who don't already understand. They're dog whistling to people who already do understand. And so that's the big Rubicon. And then you got people like Alexander Mercuris or the lawyer Robert Barnes, who actually deflect. And when they're asked point blank about Jewish power, they'll say, no, it's not Jewish power. This is in Mercuris's case, the English nobility, the English upper classes have always been Russophobic, going back hundreds of years.
That's not true, actually.
It's not. Well, then
it's not true to the extent that he's saying. But yeah, Mercuris is another guy who's, you know, he's not going to get into that realm. I mean, he'll occasionally talk about mass immigration, but really he stays away from that topic because these people know on some level that they, when they open that can of worms, it's bye-bye YouTube, bye-bye career, bye-bye credibility in many cases. I get a little bit frustrated with Alexander because he is as important as this war is. He is obsessed with Israel. I mean, he is obsessed with the Ukraine-Russia war. And I know it's an important issue in so many ways, but, you know, he talks about it constantly. I mean, he'll cover the Middle East for like 5 or 10 minutes occasionally, and then it's straight over to the latest, 100 yards or 200 meters gain for Russia in Kherson or something, you know? I mean, it's kind of, in the big scheme of things, it's not that important what happens on a day-to-day basis on the battlefield out there, you know?
During the first year of the war, I don't know how I stumbled upon him. Maybe I stumbled upon him because he interviewed what's the guy's name? the Chilean American who got murdered in Ukraine. You know who I'm talking about.
The journalist.
Yeah, the journalist. He's got a name. He was Coach Red Pill. Some weird Hispanic name.
It'll come to me.
It'll come to us. At any rate, that's probably why I started listening to him in the first place. I can't leave it like that. I have to say the guy's name. So I'm going to look up Coach Red Pill. This is how you got to do things sometimes. So Coach Red Pill. I'm looking up Coach Red Pill. Coach Red Pill. And that is Gonzalo Lira. Okay,
Gonzalo Lira.
And Gonzalo Lira was on the show. That's probably why I started listening. Gonzalo Lira was on there saying, yeah, Gloria Nuland, she's got an ethnic grudge. She's Jewish. Her grandfather was Jewish, and just going through the whole thing.
Oh, he said all that to Mercurius, right?
He said that. And Mercurius, he said this at any rate. So I started listening to Mercurius. He's got a long show. I could listen to it on dog walks. If I was distracted and missed part, I didn't work so much because, you know, when you get down to it, all the minutiae of the front line and, you know, what parts of what villages are being captured, I'm not going to get into that level of detail anyway. And it wasn't for maybe at least a year or so that I realized he had these much shorter shows with Alex Christofaru, where he talks about more variety of issues. And as long as you go into it knowing that he's not going to talk about Jewish power, that he's going to deflect, or he's going to use coded language, it can be pretty good. But that's as far as it goes. And just circling back finally to, you know, what you were talking about with RBN. On RBN, partly because, as you mentioned, none of us get paid. We do show for the network. And how the network doesn't get completely taken down with DDoS, what do you call it, DDoS attacks and things like that, I don't know. But so far they manage. I know the Rents Network, the guy at the Rents Network, you know, he manages to stay afloat. They get attacked from time to time. And RBN gets attacked from time to time. And probably because RBN's not huge, you know, we the operating budget's not huge, we're more or less halfway below the radar. Sometimes we're above the radar, we get attacked. But the various hosts, we're not getting paid at all. And so on the one hand, we're free to say what we really think. On the other hand, unless we're either going to be older and retired, or we're going to be having to do this on just a part-time basis because we're working stiffs. And it would be nice to have people who are able to devote themselves full-time, especially people with a lot of energy. And sometimes retired people don't have as much energy. It would be nice, but it's not reality. But it's the best that we can do, because you got all these people like Tucker Carlson, and they've got so much at stake. They've got so much money. They got so much privilege, and they don't want to risk it. So they'll dance around the edges. Well, anyway, I'm just gonna stop yapping and kick it back to you.
No, I think you're right. But, you know, I think things have shifted a bit. You know, when you look at what Tucker Carlson's talking about, you know, with Israel and Candace Owens and some of the typical Trump American firster base, I think there has been a shift. And I think when you've got people like Nick Fuentes and others, you know, Kanye, more and more, and, you know, Candace Owens has been talking about Jews in a way which goes beyond just the lobby. And the Zionist issue. So I think there has been a shift. I think it's been encouraging. You know, if you look at how things have changed, say, in that arena of discussion in the last 5 years, it'll be interesting to see where it'll be in the next 5 years or in 10 years' time. Of course, over here in the UK, it's pretty frustrating because you literally have what people seem to think in the UK that they are, you know, real rebels and that they're like real based people when they push back on, you know, the attacks on our culture and blah, blah, blah. But really, it's just shot through with Zionism. I mean, it's so completely anti-Muslim. And I, you know, I'm notwithstanding, you know, it's very undesirable and dangerous, obviously, the amount of people we brought in here from who are Muslims. And it continues to be a problem as that demographic increases. But it's like it's irrelevant who opened our borders. No one seems to ever ask, what exactly changed, you know, in the last 2,000 years, suddenly from the 1960s onwards, our borders have been opened increasingly. No one ever asks that question. No one ever says, who's to gain from this? You know, they don't look at these lobbying groups. You mentioned Kevin McDonald. He's very succinctly outlined that every major Jewish organization, and they are slick, aggressive, infinitely funded, you know, support mass immigration. You would think that this would surely be relevant in the discussion, you know. But alas, not only is it not, but you know, when you hear these kind of base Tommy Robinson type people and the centrist right types over here, far from ever looking in the direction of Jews having a negative influence on this whole issue, well, they go out of their way to defend them. I mean, these people get so emotional about, oh, look what's happening to the poor Jewish community. Now we've allowed all these Muslims in here, you know. So, I mean, I was listening to this girl online yesterday. She's over in the East End of London. And she really thought she had been really based. She's like a new YouTuber. And she's like, I've had to speak up because, you know, our culture and our heritage is a threat. And got to think about our grandchildren. I'm fed up being called racist. And then she went on to say, I'm sick of people saying that to be British is a race thing. Being British is about your attitude and about if you want to come here, you need to integrate and accept our values. You know, so again, you're back to that if you take it to this logical conclusion that if all the Muslims and the Indians and the Africans came here and dropped all their Islamic extremist views and the Africans stopped all their violent and sexual crime, and all the Indians, et cetera, were great people, man, it doesn't matter, you know? So, but these are people who think they're being really hardcore, you know?
Yeah. And it's happening everywhere. It's happening in the white countries. I saw an article on the Japanese birth rate, which is falling. The population's also falling. The death rate's rising. But the population, oh, well, it's being saved because now they're 3% foreigner. I don't know what they were a few years ago, but it's getting more and more. So they have, it's 3% foreigner. That's like, that would be like close to 4 million foreigners in Japan. And if you look back, we're Sweden. Yeah.
You got one fifth of the population now are foreign born. One fifth.
Yeah, and you look at Sweden, for instance. Sweden was, you know, 4% foreign born, and of course those foreigners were, you know, some of them might have been from Norway or wherever. Back in the '60s, and now I think what is it? It's over a third are foreign born. Or first generation. And how fast is it changing in Ireland? I think in Ireland it's changing even faster than that.
Yeah, well, it's a small population. I mean, it went from about 3.5 million to about, it's over 5 million now. And like a lot of that is immigration. Although the Irish are seem to be pushing back in a way that the English are not. And I think, like I said before, I think there's a lot of those people who've been dumped on these communities where they have nothing anyway. There's a lot of poverty there. And so they're not that bothered. Maybe, you know, a lot of these people, there was, you know, one of those big, it was an ex-Crown paint factory where they were going to put, I think, 1,500 migrants. Well, there was some locals that burnt this place. I don't know if they burnt it to the ground, but they caused significant damage to this place. So, I mean, that's a message to send out to any immigrants thinking of coming to Ireland. They're not welcome when you burn down the place that they're supposed to be. So, I mean, there are those in Ireland who, I guess, think at the end of the day, I've got nothing to lose here. Some of those people who burnt that down. I mean, there's a lot of crime in Dublin anyway, but... the thing is, it does need to be recognized for what it is. It is an invasion. It is an existential threat to the existence, you know, to your peoples, your identity, your culture, and everything. And when it's recognized like that, then measures need to be taken to defend, you know, because otherwise, because the reality is, it just does keep continuing and continuing and continuing. And it's not like you're talking about a misguided economic or educational policy or something to do with your pensions that you can alter with a new government. This is arguably irrevocable. I mean, I don't know how to reverse this, you know, at this point, you know.
It is largely irrevocable. It really is, because even if you could freely ship people across borders, there's been a lot of genetic intermingling, so it's
just, you're gonna have to send all your mixed race children and your cousins and friends along with them, I guess. Which so exactly. So anyway, I think we're out of time, Patrick.
Yeah,
but thank you very much for joining me again.
Likewise.
And we will hopefully do it again soon. Okay, thank you everyone for joining me, and I'll be back again. Thank you.
Standing 6'4", weighing in 245 pounds of crime-fighting, political science, analyzing brawn, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Patrick Slattery.
So, Mike, get off this anti-cicada agenda.
I'm a born-again traditional Christian, and my favorite possessions are right here on my nightstand. That would be the King James Bible and my .357 revolver.
I'd rather be ruled by Chinamen than Jews.
Cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks, right?
Just because you steal an election and terminate the republic doesn't mean you terminate the people in the republic, because we're still here.
I'm not taking the vaccine. Fuck you, Bill Gates.
There was a way forward still on January 6th. What needed to be done is to object to every single state.
The COVID-19 virus was the setup. The vaccine could very well be a bioweapon.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcast.